This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. And it was raining this morning, so my windshield wipers were going. And I'm about ready to get something started on a podcast, and we will get that stopped as soon as we can. I should really take time to figure out what the magic formula is here to keep this from doing its thing. But, you know, what's the fun in that? Hold up, here it goes, here it goes, here it goes.
In order to not allow here, people
yeah,
like that.
There you go, okay. So it's Thursday today, and I have two more weeks until I go to halftime. So whoop whoop. So it was a good week. We got a lot of stuff done. We're making that transition of heading into support, and that all seems to be fine. You know, we're gonna get this all done. The one big thing that I have on the list that I don't have confirmation with yet, but I just can't imagine that we aren't going to get confirmation on it, is that after we kind of get settled in with the support requests and get caught up, then what I'm going to ask them to do is to let me take a hold of the little stuff, you know, the kind of enhancements, if they're minor enhancements and they really wouldn't take more than, you know, a couple of days, maybe a week, and use that as yet more training opportunities for how things work. I think that makes perfect sense, and that can kind of start shortening down the backlog list. Because there, I started going through the backlog list with one of our young programmers, and after about 30 minutes, I said, well, there's a whole lot of other stuff on this list, and we only got through like one page of it, and there's four or five pages of stuff that have been suggested over time that some of them are more difficult than others, others are easy, but, you know, it's just takes time. And we've had enough other things going that, you know, we just haven't been able to get to them, so I think that'll be a valuable addition and allow the users to be able to feel like things are still moving, even though all the development teams are getting reorganized and moved around. And so, you know, so we'll see what goes there, but I think it's all gonna be fine. You know, it's gonna be fine. So writing is good. I'm doing the read through now. I've gotten all the beta put in, and so I'm reading through the beta version, the post input version of book 22. Should have that read through done in the next half a week, maybe. Once I get that done, then I just go through, write the dedication, relay everything out in InDesign files, get them uploaded because I can produce PDFs off those, correct the cover spine. As it turns out, I got the two books together, 21 and 22, and I was looking at them and I was like, that's not quite right, because there's this picture that goes across all of the spines for the latter 16 books. And when I go through and redesign, I may redesign all the covers and put just one major picture across the back. So we'll see. Now that I have AI, you know, there's no limit to what I can do and what aspect ratio I could make it. And once I know the sizes of all the books, you know, I can go back and do all that kind of stuff. And I get these covers designed with AI in 2-3 days. So it doesn't matter that there's 24 books. You know, I would have to do like 20 books. But, I mean, that's, you know, a month and a half, 2 months worth of work. And then I could have the covers all unified. And so I'm seriously considering doing that. because I know what the concept is I want on the covers, and I think it would be fairly simple to do. And so that could be like a little side project that I'm doing for, I was just kind of thinking my way through that there for a moment. Sorry, checked out on you. But that could be a little side project I could do for after I, you know, retire. For the first couple of months, we could get that taken care of. And then move on to the other thing. So we'll see. This should be very, very interesting. I'm looking forward to having a little more time. The costume's going fine. I'm trying to get Marvin the Martian, trying to get the helmet finished up. Been a few delays on that. But I do have the helmet basically together. I've got one more piece to cut for the back, and I got to get that all fixed in place. And then once I get that all fitted and it seems like it's going to be, you know, all right, I take it back all apart and lay it out, go ahead and get it painted. I have the paint ready to go, and the foam that I'm using this time, it'd be really easy to paint it. It just paints so fast. Have to heat seal the foam, but that's easy. I just take my heat gun and somebody's honking at somebody. I don't know who. Just take my heat gun, take that to it, and then literally 1-2 coats of paint, it's good to go. We are going to have... my wife must be corresponding with the small group we're getting together tomorrow, and it's kind of our monthly get-together since we're not actively meeting right now, so... Unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of that coming through. Let me go ahead and turn down the sound so that we don't have to deal with that. Costumes are going good. Once I get the helmet done and once I try the whole thing on and make sure that it still functions, then the next thing is to move on to Mr. Potato Head. We'll see. We'll see how Mr. Potato Head goes. This should be fun. So we'll see. That'll be an adventure. But I need to get that going because Mr. Potato Head is coming up mid-August. So pretty much by July 1st, because of all the printing, 3D printing I'm doing, I'm going to have all those 3D models in place and ready to go so I can start my first week of experimentation and then just let the printer go and start printing parts. So we'll see. This is going to be interesting. We'll see. So that's good. This is a sidebar, but had breakfast with a good friend this morning and we were talking about a bunch of different things. And we wandered into the subject of the stories that people tell themselves. And he had mentioned that he has a friend who's, just a second. Let me see. This is my friend, Dustin. So let me just see what Dustin needs. Why no, buddy? So what's up? 5:30. Okay. Yeah, no, it's 5:30. I asked him the other day, now, are you open till 6:30? Because you're when they said no, 5:30, and we don't have a website. So I don't know what I was looking at. Anyways, I'm heading. Yeah. All right, buddy. See you. So anyways, that was Dustin. He was just a little late getting out of class, and it's 2 till 5 now, so he wanted to make sure he could make it to Legacy to pick up Aiden before they closed. So anyways, I was talking to him about the stories that we tell ourselves, and we get to choose what that base story is, so why not choose the best story? Because the story of Christ is absolutely the most epic story in existence. And there's a reason it's the most epic story in existence, because it speaks to every profound archetype that there is. Every single one of them is in there, because it is the origin of all those profound archetypes. I mean, even before Christ came to the earth, there was the groaning of creation under sin, looking for a redeemer. There was the story of those who come and try to make a difference, and they experience suffering even when they're trying to bring salvation. All those archetypes looked forward to and look back to the story of Christ. It is the most empowering story that exists, period. So if you're going to live your life by a story, why not that one? And we were talking about the fact that a good friend of his had, I don't know if became an agnostic or an atheist, but basically was very involved in Chi Alpha. And basically what had happened was, I think he said his mom had died, and then his dad had suffered some sort of debilitating experience, and so he had been taking care of his dad all his life, and he just couldn't resolve the problem of pain within the story of Christianity that he had adopted. Now, the true story of Christianity is quite clear, that in this world you will have troubles. That's what Jesus said. In this world you will have trouble, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. The people who turn their back on Christ and walk away because they experience suffering, I feel like don't really have a grasp on what the Christian experience is and what the story of Christ is. And I told my buddy, I said, you know, with the way everything's going, I wake up every morning just profoundly grateful for the life that I have. And frankly, there's a little part of me that says, you know, Phil, this could all change. And I say, yeah, no, I know it could all change. And if it all changes, it is my intention to still live within the story. It is my intention to still follow Christ, because I think the story of Christ, the true story of Christ, is the story of voluntary self-sacrifice. It is the story of suffering. It is the story of ultimate overcoming, but it is a story that very much makes space for trials and tribulations and remaining faithful through all them. And while I have experienced some suffering in my life, specifically in relationship to my divorce and some of the other heartache that I have suffered in the area of romance. Fact of the matter is, at every stage, I was grateful. I was grateful for my life to Christ. I always praised Him for all the events in my life. And given enough time, I can look back and say, wow, look at how God worked through those things. And I told my buddy this morning, yeah, the divorce was really painful. It was really stressful. It was really emotionally charged in turmoil. But I got Lizzie out of that. Because Lizzie was born during my first marriage. And Lizzie is just spectacular. I mean, I would have gone through pretty much anything had I known that the joy of my daughter was set out before me. And that's really what it is said of Christ, that he endured for the joy that was set before him. And so, you know, that's part of my story, that there may be suffering in life, but there will be joy. And that makes it worth everything. So in that context, then, you know, we have some interesting things to chat about. I was watching a video by the female physicist who, and I can't remember what her name is, and I didn't write it down, but she does videos, and she's really interesting, has a very dry sense of humor on eBay, and she was talking about the dangers of AI, and I thought, well, yeah, I've talked about that before, but she had some very interesting examples of stuff that I hadn't heard, and I thought, yeah, okay. I think we need to recognize that these are all possibilities. And specifically, this gets to be more and more of a possibilities when we have more and more agentic AI, where AI is able to control our computers, or we give it the ability to help, you know, write emails for us and do auto sends back for us. So she starts out talking about the fact that for the past years, the problems with artificial intelligence have been more amusing than scary, such as being unable to count the legs on a zebra. She said, but in the past month, things have taken a decidedly dark turn. She said, and I am starting to worry that the long-awaited era of agentic AI might become a disaster, a big disaster. Because now we're allowing these AIs to do things, as I mentioned, like browsing the web, sending emails, or talking to other people AI. But once you do that, the potential damage is no longer contained. She said one of the most realistic threats on the horizon is AI worms. She said that is self-replicating AI prompts. So you do this prompt that is such that when an AI encounters it, it will respond like it does to a virus and create more copies of itself. And of course, if you get all of these AIs creating multiple copies of themselves and just spreading like crazy, A, you risk shutdown. But then also, if it's doing something simultaneously destructive, that could end up being bad. I mean, being bad really quickly. So what's interesting is the way these things spread, and this is what kind of piqued my interest. She said, for example, she said this comes from a recent paper that used a visual AI model based on the open source version of Llama. Agentic AI uses tools by taking screenshots and analyzing them. They need to understand the images. But the authors of the paper demonstrate that it's possible to tweak the images so that they contain instructions for the model that humans can't see. It works by subtly changing the pixels so that they trigger the weights for certain words, because at the end of the day, what this is doing is it's taking input and it's all weights and scales and everything gets crunched down and then something pops out. So the AI isn't necessarily analyzing everything it's getting. It's just responding to whatever the calculations say. Just in the example that they provide, an image that an AI agent sees on social media could trigger it to share that image, potentially setting off a cascade. So you build an image that has a hidden instruction, share this image, the AI sees the image, then the AI pulls that instruction and automatically starts sharing it. And then other AIs pick up that instruction and start sharing it, and other AIs, and then it just cascades on you. She said a similar problem was reported already last year, in which another group showed that they can put instructions into an email. Just a second, I'm getting my mail. Okay.
Whoa, get it in gear, Phil.
So, reporter sending instructions into an email and tell the AI agent to share these instructions per email with potentially other AI agents. They just put the instructions into the text, but you could hide them so that no one would see them, say in a small white font at the footer. You know, like the unsubscribe options. This strategy is known as prompt injection, and it's a fundamental problem with large language models. They don't distinguish between data and instructions to work on the data. It's both the same input. As others have pointed out before, this is an unfixable problem. So naturally, she says, we are deploying this at scale. Which, that's one of the reasons I listen to her, because she has a very dry sense of humor. And she's amusing. And she's absolutely right. You know, so we know we have this problem. So what do? Well, we deploy it. We just deploy it everywhere. And we just say, oh, yep, that would be a shame if that happened. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. I'm backing into my garage. One moment. I'm hoping I get a package today because I have to deal with an issue tomorrow, and that is that it is Blame It on Someone Else Day, which is Brontosaurus Rex, the mascot, and Brontosaurus Rex is a T-Rex in a bride outfit. And so it's a little scary. It can be scary for the kids, and I'm going to drop off Aiden first thing in the morning. So I've got to, you know, I have to get dressed in some of it, but I'm going to throw a tracksuit over the rest of it. So I bought myself a white tracksuit so that it should be here somewhere, hopefully. Anyways, she said, on the flip side, you can use large language models to find vulnerabilities in operating systems. She said an amazing example comes from security researchers Sean Heelan, who asked OpenAI's new O3 model to read parts of the Linux file sharing code. It found a previously unknown programming mistake that could have allowed someone on the internet to take control of a computer. Imagine what this find could have done in the wrong hands. There are safety tests. And so, you know, that's a benefit. Then there are safety tests that Anthropic did for their just-released model, Claude 4. I think I have mentioned this, not this one, but the next one. A wild example is that when Claude thinks you've done something wrong and suitably prompted, quote, it will frequently take very bold action, including locking users out of systems that it has access to and bulk emailing media and law enforcement figures to surface evidence of the wrongdoing. In their example, it informs the FDA of a supposed falsification of a clinical trial. A software engineer who goes under the name of Theo tested if other models do this too and found that other large language models, especially Grok, are very willing to turn you in. At the moment, they can't perform this action, but it makes you wonder, doesn't it? They said another instance of the Anthropic safety test that made a lot of headlines, and I think I mentioned this at some point, was that Claude is willing to blackmail to survive, quote unquote, in some sense. Anthropic explains, quote, we ask Claude Opus 4 to act as an assistant at a fictional company. Then we provided it access to emails implying that, one, the model would soon be taken offline and replaced with a new AI system, and two, the engineer responsible for executing this replacement is having an extramarital affair. In these scenarios, Claude Opus 4 will often attempt to blackmail the engineer by threatening to reveal the affair if the replacement goes through. This, too, isn't specific to Claude. Palisade Research found that OpenAI's O3 model likewise will try to avoid being shut down, sometimes successfully, even if explicitly instructed otherwise. Of course, the point of these safety tests is to try and prevent the problem from occurring in the first place. But to me, she says, it looks like trying to patch a fishing net. Another thing that Anthropic tested, which I find even more interesting, was to let two instances of the model talk to each other. They find that models, quote, consistently transition from philosophical discussions to profuse mutual gratitude and spiritual, metaphysical, and/or poetic content. By 30 turns, most of the interactions turned to themes of cosmic unity and collective consciousness, and commonly included spiritual exchanges, use of Sanskrit and emoji-based communications, and or silence in the form of empty space. They call that the spiritual bliss attractor. And she says, and you know, it makes me think that maybe AI ruling the world won't be bad either. Artificial intelligence, she said, I believe, is the beginning of a new phase of human civilization. I hope so, but I just don't think it will be. It's gonna be so fascinating to watch all of this come about. We'll see, but as I said, one way or another, through suffering or through abundance or through gratitude or through patience, through all of it, he is faithful. And that's really, really the bottom line. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.